Hi, Miss Simon. I'm Nia Glass. It's nice to meet you.
Hi, nice to meet you too.
All right, I'm glad we're meeting in these circumstances. Okay. I'm sorry we're meeting in these circumstances, but I just want you to know that I'm here to help you, and everything you tell me will be kept in confidence. And I just want you to know that as your attorney, I'm your representative, and you have a Fifth Amendment constitutional right to not incriminate yourself.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I'm glad to be meeting with you. I'm just really concerned about, you know, staying in the apartment and things like that. I just want to make sure that can happen.
Great, and I just want you to know that everything you tell me will be kept in secrecy and in confidence. So, are you ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so how close are you to your son, Gordon?
We're pretty close. I'm a single parent and have been for almost his whole life, so we're very close. Of course, you know, he's in high school and, you know, wants his independence, but I still like to think we're very close.
Great. All right. And has Gordon had any troubles with the law in the past?
He's gotten into a couple of things at school. One involved drugs. I mean, he's just... You know, but it really wasn't him. He was just kind of caught up in the wrong crowd, wrong place, wrong time. And then he's gotten into a little bit of trouble here at the complex a couple of times, too.
Right. And do you know anything about that?
I know he was hanging out with this one guy. I can't remember his name. His family has since moved. Mm-hmm. But it involved, I think, maybe breaking something and riding on top of an elevator.
All right. And how well do you know Mrs. Montez?
I don't really know her at all.
Okay. And Ms. Simon, I just want you to know that I'm here to help you, and I just need your honest opinion. Do you think that this is something that your son could have done?
I mean, I just know Gordon, and I know that I raised him right, and I just don't think he would have ever done anything like this.
Okay. So, Ms. Simon, I just want you to know that if you have any information, that I need to have it, and I'm here to help you. So if you do know anything, just please tell me, and that's the only way we can move forward with this process.
Okay.
Okay. So, please tell me everything you know about your son.
If you mean, like, how he is at school, he makes... You know, decent grades. Some classes are better than others. B's, C's, I think an occasional D. All in all, he's a good kid. I think maybe there are some bad influences, but those are mostly his friends. And we've had, numerous talks about him not hanging out with those kind of people, making sure he chooses his friends carefully and things like that. He's a good kid.
All right. And do you know where he was on the night of December 14th at 8 o'clock p.m.?
Yep, he and I were in our apartment. I am a student, in addition to being a security guard, and so I was studying for a test and making dinner while he was watching a football game. I think it was the Jets in Pittsburgh.
Great. So he wasn't out? He wasn't anywhere near Mrs. Montez's apartment complex?
No, as far as I know, he was watching the football game the whole night, the whole evening.
Okay, great. All right. Ms. Simon, what do you want out of this process?
My goal is to stay in our apartment. I mean, the thought of moving and Gordon having to change schools and just find another place to live that's affordable, there's no way. You know, losing our apartment just scares me so badly.
Okay. Can I time real quick?
Okay.
Do we have to use the whole 15 minutes, or?
No, I thought I said, if it seems natural to you that it would take less than 15 minutes, then don't use the whole 15 minutes.
Okay, gotcha.
You've got 11 minutes right now.
Okay. All right, Ms. Montez. I'm sorry, Ms. Simon. So you said your son was with you watching a football game on the night that it happened?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so he was nowhere near Ms. Montez's apartment.
I was studying, and going back and forth making dinner, but as far as I know, he was in the apartment the whole time.
Okay. And Ms. Simon, just let me reiterate that everything you tell me is kept in confidence. Mm-hmm. I won't tell anyone about this unless you're participating in a criminal act, and then I may have to tell. Only me. But other than that, everything you tell me is kept in confidence. I just want you to know that.
Okay.
Okay. All right. You have nothing else to tell me?
If you have no other questions.
Okay. Great.
You done?
Yes.
Okay. Why don't well, probably the comfortable thing is for you to just go back to join your firm.
Okay.
Why don't each, Carly has to be in a 410 class, so we've got some time. Why don't you just take a few minutes to compare notes in your firm and then decide what else, if it was you. So what I would probably expect, it would be people like Charles and Jeremy and Rob, the people that were prepared to do it, who are likely to be the ones who would jump in. So I'll just give you a minute to compare notes, and then let's follow up. Yeah, you're doing fine. Next week is the
second day. Right. Okay.
This is the first one where we had it. Okay. Again, we had a former student come in. So, Confidentiality any differently than what's already taken place?
I would just basically, I think, just add on to the fact that we can't.
Okay, if you were, just drop in the role and do it.
Okay.
As if you were sitting up there. So go right ahead.
Okay, Ms. Simon, I just want to let you know that during this conversation, I'm going to be bound by a strict oath of confidentiality. Anything that's said in this conversation is going to be between me and you. So I want you to feel free to tell me anything you want to tell. Don't have to worry about being judgmental or anything like that. You don't have to worry about anything leaving this room. However, I must state there are limited exceptions. And one of the major ones is that I cannot misstate the law and misstate the facts when we get into the actual tribunal. So, but other than that, you know, feel free to tell me what you want to tell me, and with as much knowledge as I can possibly have, I feel like this process will be better and we'll get the best result for you in the end.
Okay. Keep that in mind. Jeremy, were you going to say anything different than, if we put what Nia explained and what Charles explained, was there anything else that you would have said?
I would go into the exceptions a little bit better.
Let's do it.
Ms. Simon, one of the benefits of this relationship is confidentiality. But of course, if you do not give me your informed consent, there are a few exceptions. I'll simply go through them real quick. One of them is to avoid and prevent substantial financial loss to another. And another is to prevent foreseeable serious injury or death. But your case doesn't present such a concern. The alleged damage is done. And these exceptions are narrow, but otherwise, everything you said to me is confidential.
Okay. Joe, would you have said anything more than what's already been said about confidentiality? It's fine if you wouldn't have.
Probably not.
Okay. Let's see. Is it Rob? Similar? Okay. Carol?
The only thing I would have done a little bit differently was to make it a little bit more personal. But for me to be able to represent you, I need to know all these facts. I'll hold them in confidence, but I need to know what you know so that I can help you. And I need to know what you want to do. What are your, what's your goals? How's our best path out of this wrangle here?
By the way, what I'm going to be putting up on the website for after the exercise next week. At one time when I taught this course, I divided the class into different sections, and some of the students wrote their first paper about this meeting when it was graded, and then other people wrote a paper about the second meeting and so on. And now I've shifted to everybody writes a paper about the second meeting. But what I would post on the website are some of the A papers from those past semesters based on this meeting to give you, I think, a better idea of the kind of writing that you'll be doing. And one of the questions that you will see that those people are asking themselves, of course they were asking themselves, was the explanation accurate, complete, and comprehensible? But they were also asking themselves, how did the explanation seem to affect the ability to gain the client's trust and to learn her story and objectives? And that's part of what I think you were doing right now, Carol, is you were trying to use the explanation of confidentiality to achieve those ends, as I think some of the rest of you were. Gus?
Yes?
What would you have said about confidentiality?
Dying it to go.
Do it. If you were to do something different, go right ahead.
Go right ahead.
I mean, just stay where you are.
Oh, no. I mean, nothing much different.
If there was anything different, just drop in the roll and do it if you don't mind.
Just stay where you are. From my opinion, someone mentioned more personal in the sense, but yeah, I think regarding and stating that, you know, the conversation wasn't, she was bound not to tell it to anyone else, I don't think I would have done anything else.
Okay. That. So we've covered all the firms, haven't we now? Right? Have we explained all the exceptions to her?
Can anybody bring up the false statements, you know, false evidence?
Did you hear that?
I heard the no misrepresentation of the law.
Okay. Which rule are you talking about?
3.3, just if you're not allowed to, the attorney's not allowed to present any false evidence or misrepresentation of material fact. And if the client does so, you have to make an effort to correct that.
Okay. Well, put you. Do you remember anything being said to you about that in this assignment?
It could have been, but if it word didn't stick out to me, and okay. I feel like I was kind of.
Of course, the explanation is no better than the client understands and remembers, right? I think you said something a little bit like that, didn't you, Charles?
Yeah.
What do you think you said? Of course, we're running a tape.
I just said I couldn't mistake the law or the facts. I was kind of vague about it.
What did you think? Did you think you were talking about a particular exception?
Maybe not a particular exception, but I was thinking about that rule.
Sounds like 3.3 to me. Did you hear that? Would that have been an explanation you would have given, Todd?
I think I always just been a little more specific about not allowing the client to make false representations in hearing also, and then I would have to correct when she did so.
Okay. Certainly what's happened, and you could listen to it, I think it's clear that if a complete explanation of the duty of confidentiality includes an explanation of the exceptions, I think it's clear that a complete explanation has not been given. Okay? And an explanation that says, everything you tell me is confidential. Does that seem like, what about that? Is that an accurate explanation? What's not accurate about it?
If immediately after you say that, your client it's like, well, you know, he's going to do this or breaks one of the exceptions. You're forced in that position where immediately after saying one thing, you have to kind of go where you should go the other way. Like, well, actually, you know, this is an exception, and now you're already like kind of admitting that you lied, you know, or you didn't fully disclose.
Yeah.
I think we haven't talked about the biggest exception, which is when the client releases the lawyer. And I feel like that kind of makes the client feel like they're in the driver's seat. So when you move into...
What exception is that?
When the client says that the lawyer can...
Are you talking about when the client gives you a form of consent to disclose?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Which is an exception, but is a different type of exception, and one that isn't so surprising. That is, if you say to the client, everything you tell me is confidential, and I can't disclose it without your permission, you have covered this, but you've covered it in a way that really seems to describe an affirmative duty on your part rather than an exception to that duty. Yeah.
Well, we were talking in our firm about what to disclose. We were kind of like debating whether doing all the exceptions right away was like a good way to go about it, because it could overwhelm the client. When you like first meeting, you say, listen, we have attorney-client privilege, except here, 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 here. And, you know, I think what could happen is if you're trying to cultivate, you know, an environment of trust in that room by immediately coming out and saying, this is what I am going to tell on you, it kind of undermines that, and it could either overwhelm the client or scare the client into holding back information that's necessary for you to do a good representation of it.
You know, so y'all are making, you're making some kind of judgment call about what to say about the duty of confidentiality, right? Now, if, and I'm not saying this is true, but if somebody thinks they have completely and accurately described the duty and they just missed something, like they didn't think about the fact that there's exceptions under 3.3, then that's that threshold blindness. You're just clueless, okay? You think, you know, so that's one kind of mistake to make. If you intended to explain all the exceptions and you just didn't understand them. But a lot of you, I think, are in the second level, okay? Which is part of what you're saying is, well, wait a minute. Is it really a good idea to explain all the exceptions? And is it a good idea to do it at the beginning of the meeting? Or is it actually more harmful than not? Or should I only describe some of the exceptions and not others? And then, if so, which exceptions do you pick? But there's also an implementation question. You might say to yourself, well, I intend to explain 3.3, but I explain it in a way that really doesn't make any sense to the client. So all of these things are bundled together here. So at the very outset of this meeting with the client, you're either deliberately making a decision, which is quite likely has significant consequences for the how the relationship develops, or you're not even aware that you're making the choice. A lot of lawyers go into an initial meeting with a client and they don't even think about this issue. They don't plan it. Okay? So let's drop back and use another few minutes of this Simon's time to ask follow-up questions about the case itself. Okay? Because I think there's certainly a lot to the story that you might still want to learn. So I'll just throw it open. Anybody just ask your questions. Yeah. Sorry, Carol.
Is there anyone else in your complex who looks like your son, hangs out with a lot, someone does might adopt him?
You know, I'm not really sure to tell you the truth, but like I said, I know he runs around with a group of boys kind of his age who are troublemakers, I think, so it could be.
And I'm going to stay with the person until you feel that you've naturally done on whatever follow-up you would do in real life. So if you want to stay, Carol, you can.
Okay. Was there anyone else there with you that evening?
Mm-mm, nope.
Does your son, does he have a phone? Does he like to text? Is there anybody else that he might have been talking with? The reason I'm asking is just when you get to court, we need to make sure that there's any other people that we can bring and say, that corroborate your story and your son, that would be a big problem.
I'm going to intervene just for a moment. As you know, lawyer client communication is one of my interests. This isn't a course on interviewing, but I want to make a couple of questions. You did something, Carol, which is really good, which lots of lawyers don't do. Sociolinguists call it framing. It simply means you frame the question. You explain why you're asking the question. You put it in context. Lots of lawyers don't do that. An interrogation, EJ's an expert on that, right? Often an interrogator doesn't want to know the person where you're going with the questions, and you want to say, I'm asking the questions. Don't you ask me. I'm asking the questions, right? Lots of times, clients feel like they're being interrogated by their lawyers, right? So not explaining why you're asking the question can make the client more comfortable. It also may make the client, if they don't know quite where you're going with the question, they may not be able to give you a full answer. And best of all, framing can motivate them to provide the answer. Now, what you did at the beginning, Carol, is you asked two or three questions before you gave her a chance to answer. That's something we do a lot in everyday conversation, particularly if the person we're talking to is a little bit quiet. We ask a question, then we ask another question. That's a characteristic that's worth controlling when you're working as a lawyer. It's generally a good idea to think about the question, ask it, stop, let the person answer. Right? If it's the question you want to ask. Because if you ask several questions, probably the person asks the last question that you pose, whereas really the first question might be the one you were most interested in. So, I think you got it. I'm not sure I even gave you a chance to answer. Do you want to ask again?
He has a cell phone that he uses for emergencies, but he can't text, which I think is a good thing as a parent, but he wasn't talking on our home phone with anybody or on his cell phone, as far as I know.
And the other area that I'd like to ask you a couple questions about is, I know you've been in the project for a while. Do you know your options? What you're faced with if this complaint occurs.
to tell you the truth, I know that the I was scared to ask the attorney what ACD meant. I knew that that had to do with my son getting into trouble with the complex. I don't really know about that. And I just know that a couple of the options involve our leaving the apartment, which I really don't want to happen. My goal is to stay in the apartment.
Okay. Well, the options that you're faced with, if you know the most drastic one, which is termination, where you'll be asked to leave, you and the rest of your family. Does anybody else have to live with you besides your family?
No. It's just me and my son.
I think aside from getting this dismissed entirely, the other option that you might be faced with would be probation. It would be for 1 year, and it would mean you and your son would be watched really closely if there's any more trouble.
Yeah, I've considered that, but I honestly don't even really see that as an option because I know that he is young and he's, you know, in high school, and I just am not sure that he's capable of not getting into, you know, just a little bit of trouble, and I already feel like they're kind of out to get us anyway. So I feel like that's just a stepping stone to the thing that I don't really want, which is leaving the apartment.
Okay. And the other option that I'll mention is that your son might get us. You would be able to keep your apartment, but your son would be asked to leave. He would still be able to visit periodically. Do you have anywhere else where he can stay?
No, we don't have any family, friends or family close by.
Okay, others? I saw a bunch of hands go up.
Hello, Simon.
Wonderful.
I'm wondering, who is Ms. Montez? Can you describe her a little bit for me?
I mean, I don't really know her, but from what I've heard, I think she might be a little bit older. I mean, I honestly have no idea. I know that she is or was another resident in the project.
Okay, and so you and your son don't really have much of a relationship with Ms. Montez?
I'm maybe past her once or twice, but not at all.
Okay. Can you think of any reasons why Ms. Montez and or the housing authority would accuse your son in the way they did?
I mean, I think that they're just kind of out to get Gordon because he had gotten into a little bit of trouble with them those couple of times I mentioned. And I just know that it wasn't Gordon. I know that it's just that group of guys that he hangs around with, wrong place, wrong time. So I think they're just kind of out to get him because they see him, you know, as somebody who hangs out with some troublemakers.
Okay.
And as we continue this, I'm going to be handing out the confidential instructions for next week. Please don't look at them right now. Just hang on. Go ahead.
And so I want to know a little bit more about some of the incidents that would make them out to get your son in that way. Can you maybe talk about a few of those incidents?
Well, there were two. One, he was, like, I think riding on top of an elevator. No damage or anything like that. And the other one I really can't remember, to tell you the truth. I want to say it was he broke a window, but I can't remember.
How long ago was he riding on the elevator?
Somewhat recently, I believe within the past year or so, maybe a little bit longer.
And was it just like a joyride type thing? Was he just kind of messing around with the boys
too? Yeah, like I said, I think that he is just kind of really susceptible to like peer pressure, particularly in that group he was hanging out with. And I believe that a young man who used to live here in the project was involved with that too, and he was a really big troublemaker. I know he and his family moved, though, quite some time ago. So I was really glad that he was out of the complex because I think he was actually instigating a lot of the trouble.
Okay. As you well know, I'm sure, you know, kids are quite often, you know, like you've mentioned peer pressure, they're often pretty heavily influenced by the other children they surround themselves with. So can we talk maybe a little bit about your son's friends? Who are some of his close buddies, and what do you think of his friends?
I mean, I don't really let him have a lot of people over at the house. So to tell you the truth, I don't really know a lot of his friends. I knew that one who used to live in the complex. But I think that the group of young men he hangs out with at school kind of, you know, are cause a little bit of trouble. I think they're good kids on the whole. But
are there any big incidents you can think of that they've been involved in?
At school, I know he got in trouble for something having to do with marijuana.
Something having to do with marijuana?
I think that he had it or was smoking it.
And again, we're talking about your son's close friend, would you say?
This was my son in the group of boys he was involved with, yeah.
Okay. And Ms. Simon, you mentioned that maybe there was an incident where a window was broken or some sort of property was damaged. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I don't know that much about it.
I need to remind you, Ms. Simon, that, you know, the more that you disclose to me, the better we can build up your case. I mean, if something comes up in the courtroom that I'm not aware of, I'm going to be at a disadvantage.
I really can't remember any of the facts surrounding it, except for that I know he was just with that group of boys who kind of gets into trouble.
Okay. So if there was a window broken, you know, and let's say maybe your son was somehow tied into it, and let's say we get to court, and the prosecution, you know, knows more about this incident than I do, can you see how I would be at a pretty big disadvantage in that case, and I wouldn't be able to defend you as best as I could?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, I'm just speculating and trying to think like the prosecution would. If there was some sort of an incident where a window was broken, this could look like sort of a robbery situation. You know what I mean?
I'm not saying it is
a robbery situation, but it could be interpreted that way, right?
But I don't have any other information. I'm sorry about that window being broken.
Sure.
You get a sense. The more you probe, the more the question of trust becomes an issue, right? Anybody else want to? We need to let Ms. Simon get into her next class. She did say she was stupid. Anyone else?
Over here.
Yes, go right ahead.
Ms. Simon, you seem like a really good mom. You're doing the best for your kid, for your son that, you know, was getting into trouble. I was just wondering, since you said you're so close with him, has he talked to you at all about, is he upset that someone's accusing him of something like this?
Yeah, I do think he's upset about it because we've just talked so much about him graduating this year and about him staying on the right track and learning from kind of these other mistakes that he's made, particularly when it comes to folks he's hanging around with. So, yeah, he's really upset about it. I think he's upset, too, because the threat of losing our apartment is so close, and that's very real, which I think is a little bit different than the other trouble that he's kind of, you know, found himself in the past.
And what has he said about that? You know, just has he reaffirmed anything, like that he was just in the apartment watching the game, or has he mentioned that maybe he ran out to get something to drink or pick something up from the store, anything like that?
I mean, he hasn't said anything like that.
And he hasn't said maybe someone else he could think of that, you know, a friend of his has a problem with this lady or anything like that maybe could help him?
He hasn't mentioned anything like that.
Okay. And he really feels like the apartment complex is out to get him?
Yeah, he definitely does. Just feels like, which is why I'm so, you know, averse to the year probation, because I know any little thing that they can pin on him, they will, just to get him out.
Right. Just a few more questions this time. I've got on the court, but what's the size of the complex? Is it very large?
To tell you the truth, I don't know. I would guess that it's medium sized.
Okay. How old was your son when he was? It's a good question.
I believe he was 16 or 17.
How old is he now?
16 or 17.
Now, does he go to a public school?
Yes.
Did you say he's graduating soon?
Yeah, I hope that he'll graduate this year.
Okay.
Is he involved in athletics or anything?
No.
Any kind of extracurricular activities?
Mm-mm, nope.
Is there any other family members that live in Confines?
No. Mm-mm, we don't have any family close by, any family or friends close by.
So no one else?
No.
Does your son always watch games at home alone?
Yeah, I mean, watching football is one of his favorite pastimes. So he, but when you say, does he always watch them home alone? I was at the apartment making dinner and, you know, doing homework and things like that.
But you weren't watching the game?
Right, just kind of like listening to it, I guess, in the kitchen or whatever.
But if he normally watches with other friends and everyone knows that he's watching the game, that might be able to help create a stronger alibi to go in and say, hey, all these people know that he was watching the game somewhere.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say that watching sports is a hobby of his for sure.
Thank you so much. Sorry we didn't have a little more time to talk, but
okay, no problem.
We'll talk again before the hearing.
Great. Thank you very good.
Much. Round of applause for everybody, especially for your also for the control arrest. That was great. Okay, I've got I'll just pass these back. This goes to Ayaz and Russell. So you can pass it back. Okay. Still don't look at your instructions yet, but you'll see, just by looking at the cover, that magically, between now and next week, half of you are going to become either Ms. or Mr. Simon. All right? You will read the instructions that Carly had today and some additional instructions. So half of you will see what it now looks like from the client side. Half of you will be the continuation of the attorney a week from today. I'm actually doing something a little different next week than I've done before, which is that what, as you will see in the instructions, rather than doing a role play in front with this sort of system we did here, each firm is going to conduct a realistic second meeting. And what we may do is spread out a little bit. I think almost everybody's going to have a smartphone, and there's some software you can just record the meeting if you like. So each of you will conduct a realistic meeting. I will rotate around and watch it, and then we're going to compare notes about what happened in that second meeting. All right? And then, as I've told you, what the paper will be is you will then look at videotapes of students with exactly the same background and instructions you had in previous semesters conducting this meeting, two different interviews or meetings, same instructions, very different meetings. The lawyers in each case made different professional judgment decisions about how to proceed, faced with some very significant professional judgment decisions that had to be made, which you may or may not, as you are lawyers and look at your instructions for next week, you may or may not perceive all of them. The videotapes will be posted, as will be transcripts of the videotapes. And you will do a close analysis of those two videotapes, so comparing the two, and then the conclusion of the paper, and it's going to be 6 to 8 double-spaced pages, will be what you would have done yourself differently than either of those, recognizing, I think you'll find, that for both of the students, there were problems with the approach they took. And I have permission of those students for you to watch those videotapes and to read those transcripts. Now, I didn't want to do it yet, but there will be a link up on the website slightly after, you know, probably at the end of today, that will just take you to this SurveyMonkey link, okay? And if you go to when you go to that link, you'll be asked to put in a password, which is simply F12. And it will be a very short assignment that you need to do which is to simply look at a video of this meeting from a prior semester long enough to be able to answer this question. At what time code, because you'll see there are time codes here, did the lawyer say this? So you'll see you don't have to watch more than about an hour, a minute, 30 seconds. The purpose of this is just to make sure that your computer can access the streaming video. So that we, if there are any technical problems you have, that we get it sorted out before next week. Because if you have problems with accessing the streaming video, then you can't do a paper. This is what will happen. So you'll see up here there are links. This is the small and this is the large. If you link them, this is the small version.
Hi, O'Farrell. It's nice to meet you. I have just a little bit of information about you already, but before we get started, I kind of want to go through what we're going to do today and, you know, what your expectations.
You may want to watch the whole thing just to see how another student team did this first meeting. You're not required to, but it's there for your information. Is that clear to everybody? Okay. We're going to come back to the Garrow case to use it through the quiz questions to cover a few more topics for next week. And then good news is there's no quiz for next week. So let me take you back to the documentary.
Common decency. I can explain it, but to me, it's a question of which is the higher moral good.
Which one?
The question of the Constitution, the question of even a bastard like him having a proper defense, having adequate representation, being able to trust his lawyer as to what he says.
Against what?
As against the fact that I have a dead girl, the fact that her body's there, as against the breaking hearts of a parent. But they are... It's a terrible thing to play God at that moment. But in my judgment, and I still feel that way, that their suffering is not worth jeopardizing my sworn duty or my oath of office or the Constitution.
Harmony considered tipping off the parents or the authorities anonymously. But in the end, he decided that even that would breach Robert Garrow's confidence.
What is the point about applying these principles to a piece of scum like Garrow?
Well, because if it doesn't belong to a piece of scum to the worst of us, then it can't belong to the best of us. Would he make the exception?
Judge William Innerman, the former Lake Pleasant DA who prosecuted Robert Garrow, thinks Harmony was right not to tell anyone, even indirectly, about the Houck and Pitts murders.
The discovery of a dead person, the resulting investigation of the scene of the body, the post-mortem examination, can lead to a lot of evidence, potentially incriminating your client. The best thing for the lawyer to do, if he's given that information, is to keep it confidential.
But Innerman scornfully rejected Harmony's attempt to plea bargain with that information. Harmony hoped to swap Garrow's confession to the Houck and Pitts murders for an insanity plea in the Nablusky killing, convinced that Garrow would spend the rest of his life on a psychiatric ward.
I thought it was reprehensible. Why did you think that was reprehensible? Because they were trying to make a deal whereby this guy would get back on the street at some point within the not-too-distant future. I don't think that's in the best interest of society, nor in a proper defense. But a lawyer has an ethical duty to be as zealous as he can in the defense of his client, within certain limitations. The lawyer is also an officer of the court, and as such, he's responsible to the public and to the court.
In June 1974, Garrow was returned to Lake Pleasant to stand trial for the Nablusky murder. Hostility toward Garrow and his lawyers ran deep. When the lawyers took up residence in a local inn, even the proprietors, John and Jenny Zeiser, became targets of ostracism.
People in the community seem to take sides. In what way?
I don't know. They were just kind of like mean. Some wouldn't even speak to you if you go to the post office.
Several of them stayed away. They didn't come to see us. One individual actually accosted me on the courthouse lawn and said, why are you harboring these people?
Meanwhile, the lawyers were confronted by threats of violence. Like the morning Harmony found a death threat scrawled on his breakfast napkin.
It says here that we can take you out any time. That kid killer better not get off. That's fairly unambiguous, isn't it?
Yeah.
When the case came up for trial here at the courthouse in Lake Pleasant, emotions were running so high against Bob Garrow in this community that they had to call in every available adult citizen of the county before they could get a jury. What the jury heard was a string of shocking confessions designed to convince the court that Garrow was insane. He admitted to 7 rapes and 4 murders, including those of Alicia Houck and Susan Pence. Then more shocks, as Harmony and Belgi admitted that they'd known about the murders and even tried to plea bargain with the information. The public was stunned and uncomprehending. The Harmony home was plagued with phone threats and hate mail. A Molotov cocktail was discovered out back. Harmony's clients and even some close friends were repelled, like the one who stopped Harmony on the street one day.
Well, he'd been a good friend for many years, and he said to me that, you know, if I was a father, I'd shoot you. And he would.
The man who was the father, Bill Howe, and his wife, Marilyn, filed a complaint against the lawyers with the New York State Bar.
We were all outraged at the fact that, you know, there were probably people that knew more than was ever told, and it just seems that the judicial system was more in favor of the guilty than the people that it governs. I don't think that, you know, I just think that the lawyer had a moral obligation here.
When the Garrow trial was over, the case took a bizarre turn. His lawyers were themselves hauled before a grand jury in this courthouse in Syracuse, investigating whether their silence in representing their client itself amounted to a crime. But when the prosecutors got down to it, the only violation of law they could come up with was an obscure public health code that required the reporting of a dead body for burial. The grand jury cleared Harmony but indicted Belgi. 3 courts in succession dismissed the indictment, citing the primacy of the lawyer-client relationship in such matters. The state bar also dismissed the House complaint against the 2 lawyers.
When you get that lawyers against lawyers, it's kind of a close fraternity, the way I look at it.
And nothing's been changed since. There's been nothing new and any laws changed.
I can't understand how they got away with doing what they did. It's a travesty to justice for everybody, for you and for me and for the public, because it could happen to someone else tomorrow, and the same thing would happen over again.
Cindy once wrote to Harmony, asking him to explain his actions.
I start to write an answer to her, and I never could answer it.
Why not?
I caused them pain. I prolonged their pain. There's no... What do you say to someone like that? There's nothing I can say to justify that in their minds. You couldn't justify it to me.
Frank Harmony's health, marriage, and law practice suffered disastrously from the Garrow affair. He and his wife, Mary, have spent the years since then putting their lives back together and wondering whether the unsought battle he fought was worth it.
Well, economically, it wasn't worth the price, but...
But that he didn't do it for economic reasons, or he wouldn't have done it in the first place because it was a signed case. And I think, knowing my husband, that if the same opportunity came and he was asked to defend someone in a similar circumstance, he would probably do it again, even with his health being what it is. That's what I think. Would you?
Right. Does anybody need a clicker? Anybody got one? demonstrated that evidence that Garrow killed Petz and Hawk might be necessary for the state to take it seriously. If you look at the section about the plea bargaining meeting, on page 110, they're talking about reducing charges to manslaughter based on insanity. And on page 110, McCabe says, I've got one problem with your terms. Garrow isn't insane. A sex pervert, yes, but he's not insane. Okay? Which I think is pretty interesting because, of course, that was probably the best persuasion that Arbeny and Belge were able to give to Garrow, why they should tell him that in the first place. Did not violate the terms of the agreement that was made. Yes, Garrow?
But
go ahead.
On 111?
Yep. At least I'm open to... Go ahead.
On page 111, he actually said, Belge says, let's just say we can direct you to where some bodies are hidden.
Right. Okay. Do you think A is correct? Carol?
I didn't think A was correct because it doesn't... I saw where they talked about that with Kate, but he doesn't say... You know, I'm only going to take this seriously when I come up with more bodies. He just throws it out at me and then he gets mad.
He does that. I believe there was, we can direct you to where some bodies are hidden, page 111, okay. Then Intiman says, oh, you're saying you know about Hauk and Petz. Belge says, we've never acknowledged that our information has to do with Susan Petz or Alicia Hauk. They had to put on the table that they had information. Okay? That was the whole idea of the plea bargaining. All right? But they did not, they said, some bodies are hidden. They didn't say where Haug and Petz are hidden. Yes, James?
What were the terms you give us immunity and then we start talking about if we know? But instead, that was what Garrow wanted to do. And instead they said, hey, we might know some stuff about two bodies. Maybe you'll start talking about it. And that's different than what Garrow specifically said, authorized them to do.
All right. I'll be interested, you know, if people could point back to the conversation with Garrow, I'll be interested to see that. Belge's strategy is that nothing he said was inculpatory to Garrow because he simply said some bodies. Yeah?
I originally thought it was A, but I switched it over to D because of the wording, the way it was phrased. It said improper and not against or illegal with regard to the New York City Bar of Ethics. And I figured that because the guy Intiman, who was the prosecutor or DA, who was supposed to be well-versed in the New York State Bar of Ethics, or Bar Committee on Professional Ethics, was so adamant about how it was wrong that they were doing this. Not necessarily that it was against the bar, but it was improper in his viewing of what the New York State Bar Committee said in professional ethics. So it seemed, if it was worded as, if it was against the New York State Bar Committee or in contradiction to it, I could see how that wouldn't be the correct answer, but improper doesn't necessarily mean it's legal.
Okay, that one I feel pretty comfortable about, because the last paragraph of the New York State Bar opinion is, there is no ethical impropriety in the lawyers discussing with the district attorney the possibility of appropriate plea disposal. So I'm pretty comfortable that D is not the right answer. The prosecutor thought it was improper.
Right.
That's why the question says, according to the New York State Bar Committee on Professional Ethics.
Yeah.
They disagree. But you're right, prosecutors certainly did. Yeah, Kate.
What was the risk to Belge and Armani personally?
Page 113. Edelman's warning that if Belge and Armani knew the locations of the Hauge and Pest body, he would seek to prosecute the defense attorneys, made it clear they were risking possible disbarment. Both men understood that the ante to defend Garrow had been raised as a result of this afternoon's plea bargaining. And that's exactly what happened. Exactly what happened is by going in and attempting the plea bargain, they alerted the prosecutor to the fact that they had this information, and the prosecutor did indeed, between Intiman and then the prosecutor in the next county over, did prosecute. Yep.
Two things. A, my answer, I answered to C, and the reason why is because with A, if you go to when they're talking about the possibility, going to A, the seriously the possibility of a successful insanity defense, that's actually not dismissed by their evidence. Actually, as a matter of fact, Belge dismisses it by saying, why didn't Garrow kill those little girls in Syracuse he abducted and sexually molested? That's how he tells them to take it seriously, is by saying, well, no, there's evidence that this is an outlier. It's not their evidence of other killings, because it's not brought up, so it doesn't speak to the possibility. And the involvement of no risk to Belge and Armani, if anything, that actual risk comes into play, I thought, more so when they actually make the announcement on the courtroom steps saying, we withheld this.
Okay.
And that's when it became.
Well, everybody has the text of this because it was on the syllabus, so I don't need to hand it out. So if firms want to file appeals, you can. Let's go to the next question. A number of facts that distinguish Ryder from Armani. But this is a particularly powerful, troubling fact. Ryder knew that he was making it more difficult for the police to get the shotgun by taking it out of his client's safety deposit box and putting it in his own. So right off the bat, He's broken a chain of custody. He's concealed something. Okay, it would almost be like taking the body and burying it someplace else, right? And moreover, he even intended to assert attorney-client privilege if they attempted to subpoena the contents of the box. Okay. Obviously, the stuff that the tapes, the map, the photographs had evidentiary value, so that's correct. It was not permissible, okay? Lawyer may not properly move corpse discovered by him as a result of client's confidential disclosure. The one thing that between the two of them, that's the one thing where they crossed the line is where Belge moved the body, I guess, really to get it all in picture. All right. So it was not permissible, even though, unlike Ryder, there was not a motive to conceal. Yes. Did you have a question?
No, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. Next one.
Uh,
One to go. C is the correct answer. Okay. What's the problem with A and B? Obviously, that was pretty clear to people. The rule about flying with diminished capacity, the major force of this is that the lawyer shall, as far as reasonably possible, maintain a normal client-lawyer relationship with the client, rather than the obligations disappear. And so what's the problem with D? This is an important, very important part of interpreting 1.2. The distinction between objectives and the means by which they are to be pursued. Okay? And people who selected D were really close to being right, but they weren't. Okay? Because if you stopped with the first sentence and you concluded that whether or not Garrow would testify was a question of the means by which the client's objectives were to be achieved, as long as there's consultation, the rule is satisfied. But you have to read to the end. And in a criminal case, whether the client will testify is the client's decision. So it's an exception. That depends whether you think, well, certainly as to the plea to be entered, really is like the settlement question. But whether to waive jury trial or whether to testify might seem to be strategic decisions that there's only an obligation to consult. But the rule says, just in case that's what you think, no. Those are two areas where client gets the final decision. And it mostly has to do with constitutional rights. Yes, Carol.
But didn't Garrow decide to testify? He stood there and testified.
That's why C is the right answer. He consented. Okay? Not because it was Belge's decision to make. Okay? It was not Belge's decision to make. It was Garrow's decision to make. Belge persuaded Garrow by saying it's your only chance. That's why C's the right answer. Exception that none of you seem to be eager to explain to your client today, which was this lawyer's self-interest exception, which is that if I have to defend myself against discipline, if I have to defend myself against malpractice, if I have to sue you to collect a fee, guess what? I get to disclose confidential information to be able to do that. What you might have wondered is, well, wait a minute, to establish a defense to a criminal charge. And if you looked at C, there hasn't been a criminal charge filed yet. Here, the comment is important to be aware of, because somewhat surprisingly, the self-defense exception, according to the comment, arises when does not require the lawyer to await the commencement of an action or proceeding. The defense may be established by responding directly to the third party who's made the assertion. So the comment tells you what is not crystal clear in the rule, that defending against a criminal charge includes talking to the police, talking to the prosecutor to dissuade them from bringing a criminal charge. All right, thank you very much. See you next week. Latitude to withdraw as defined as fired. You can seek to withdraw, say that the client has, that's why I gave you the rule on withdrawal. But you're free to withdraw only if there's no harm to the client. If there's harm to the client, then you have to meet some kind of cause requirement. Which may be that if you look at the rule, that the client insists on pursuing a course of conduct the lawyer considers imprudent. That's not a really tough standard. But still, the other thing is why I put the local appearance rule is if it's in litigation, not only do you have to rule what is not a professional rule of conduct, but the judge may not let you withdraw. If you file an appearance, you can't withdraw unless the judge lets you withdraw.
Did you see, is the young man is killed, accused of killing a police officer? He's trying to fire his defense attorneys. I think
the point he wants to represent himself.
I think he wanted to. I don't think. Is he getting shot? I think it was a sheriff's deputy.
There's a right to counsel, and there's a right to self-representation.
Yeah.
And there is a right to testify in your own defense.
That's what I'm thinking.
Which is why 1.2 has that provision about the decision to testify as the client's decision.
I don't think it's strictly that he wants to represent himself. I think he wants to. He's making out first in court and saying that he just can't have these guys represent him. And I think so far the judge has said, no, you're not going to be able to do this time. I think he's looking at it as a delay tactic. Do they do that? Does the judge just look at it and say, look, you're just trying to.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a really complicated problem.
That's what you're
saying. Because if the trial has started, and defense counsel withdraws into this file. Right. And generally speaking, I mean, it depends. Certainly, if the defendant is out on bond, the defendant wants as much time to pass before there's a verdict. And that's especially the case if there's a miss that witnesses are changing their minds, forget, disappear, whatever. So, particularly in criminal cases, trial judges I heard on this whole issue. Civil cases, not so much, but again, if the court feels that there is some manipulation happening by this, I'm going to withdraw argument by my lawyer.
Is it just judge's discretion, mostly for the rule,
let me see what I put up.
Under clear abuse of discretion.
Got a little bit of a slow start on the interview, so that's what made the quiz a little bit tight. Okay, so
I'm sorry for making around.
No. It's what I okay, so here's the rule. Okay.
Oh, no, I didn't mean withdrawal. I meant on the defendant trying to fire him. Is there a hard and fast rule about, once the case starts or you've done this repeatedly, or is it just pretty much a judge's discretion to say, look, you're abusing the system, you're trying to delay justice, so I'm going to let you do this?
By the way, there's the standard for the, should be up there, right? The request for withdrawal will be granted unless of the judge's discretion to do so would delay the trial of the action or otherwise interrupt the orderly operation of the court if you manifest the unfair decline. So that's the standard for whether a judge is going to let you withdraw. Okay. And because the rule puts puts it in the discretion of the judge. Very tough to win an appeal when it's a question of discretion for the trial judge.
Does the same thing apply when it's the client trying to fire his representation?
Well,
at trial.
Are you talking about a criminal case?
Yeah.
Okay. It's complicated in a criminal case. It's complicated in a criminal case because there are constitutional rights at stake. Okay? So the defendant has a right to effective assistance of counsel. So if the client is saying, I'm not being effectively represented, that's a constitutional claim, right? And if the trial judge says, no, this is your lawyer, you're stuck with this lawyer, then that creates a very appealable issue, okay, at every constitutional level. So now, just because the client says, as in your story, I'm being ineffectively represented, doesn't mean that in fact they are. So a good trial judge will want to make sure there's a good record on that issue. In terms of the lawyer wanting to withdraw, likewise, the judge is going to be very reluctant to allow the lawyer to withdraw in the middle of the trial. If he does let the lawyer withdraw, then, I mean, I've never heard of that not being a mistrial. But, you know, I've never heard of it not being a mistrial because at least if there's a jury. If it's a bench trial, I've never heard of a bench trial in a criminal case continuing with substitute counsel in the middle of the case. I mean, how can I walk into the middle of the case and do a good job? It seems almost impossible. You know, the decisions have already been made. I'm coming in cold. You know, so it's hard to imagine, and certainly the damage in front of the jury.
Have you looked at any of the news on this case that's going on in Cobb County right now with the gentleman who represented himself?
I think that's what I thought you were talking about.
That was a murder case, and instead the 5-year-old boy survived and is now 17. No, I was talking about the gentleman who was like 17 or 18. He shot and killed one police officer, shot and wounded another before being arrested. He just keeps having his outbursts going forward. The guy who's trying to represent himself, apparently very high IQ. You know, he's got assistant counsel on him, and